All right, here we go. Overdrive off and running. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker. And up on TSN, Brian Hazy, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan.
What's going on?
How we feeling?
I had an incident today, but I don't know if I should bring it. I mean, I feel like I should bring it to the guys.
If you're thinking about it, you probably shouldn't bring it up.
It's just, I need an opinion, but it's not a sensitive topic. But it's, you know, I've got a guy who does some work around the house, but he works outside of the house, okay?
Okay. Like a dog on a farm? He's not allowed in the house?
No, like he's done work inside the house.
I see, okay.
But this stuff he's doing outside. But the question is, and I'm not lying, and I'm being, like, really genuine with
this. He wants to use the bathroom inside.
Exactly. But it's to the point where it's gotten awkward, because the first second he arrives, it's like bathroom, and it's moose, door open, and it's like the smell is beyond. And I'm not, if it was a one-off, the guy had a chili cheeseburger on the way over and it's a bad thing. This is the fourth incident. Like this guy's
planning your house.
Like it's like that's all of a sudden we've got a throne at
like
the house.
He puts it in park and his shoes are off in the back door and he's wheeling in.
Like he's not,
it's a man conversation, and it's just like, look, man, when you do a job, you got to have a porta potty on site, because this is not a free for all around here. And I don't want the boots in here and you're using outside.
Well,
no way.
I just, like, again, is that, because this time, like, it happened yesterday and it happened again today. Like, it's like the guy plans his.
That's what I'm saying. This guy's leaving his house and he's not feeling very well. He's like, it's 25 minutes. I can get there. I can put in 25.
No, but it's
and get to Noodles' house.
What's the protocol there? Is it a conversation? Is it like, because today I was like, no, that's it.
Dude, you just say to him, however you get here, you need to start planning on going on the 400 and passing an en route. Because it's not happening again. Come on. No.
This.
No way.
So during COVID, he came by. And COVID was very, as you know, very sensitive. Like people coming in with masks and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he was doing some work in the house. So no problem. But it was awkward because it's your tight family. And then this guy is just like,
he's on spring break.
He's taking liberties.
And the door open, no fan. Like it's like you walk out and now the place stinks, and then it's south. But he did it twice one day, and then the first thing the next morning he arrived. He worked till 9 o'clock that night, and God love him, the guy did some great work. Showed up at 7 a.m. the next morning. Comes in the door. The first thing he does is like, I got to use the bathroom. I'm like, what is what's going on with this guy?
It's almost like you're being punked, right?
I
like
swear
Ashton Kutcher is like involved in this somehow. I don't know. I think at a minimum you say, dude, doors are there for a reason. You know, latch them up.
The door is closed when he does, but it's like
it's
when he leaves the door open and like.
Yeah, it's a tsunami afterwards, and that is very concerning for everyone involved. I don't know. I think, I'm not sure how you handle that, because if it's a one-man crew, I think you open the door, mi casa, su casa. If it's multiple people, generally there are rules for like a site. Didn't we just go through this? Like, isn't the government putting money into making sure construction sites are more sanitary, and they've been putting in a bunch of time and effort into finding out what's going on? Because the whole city is a construction site, effectively.
Yeah.
Every time you turn any corner in the city of Toronto, you're going to see a construction team or a construction site.
Right.
But if it's a one-man team, I think you got to open the door. I think the door gets open and you say, come on, pal.
This is a one-off job. Like it's not like he's working for a week straight or something. Then I would be like, okay, let's work this out. And if he's there 12 hours a day for 5 days straight, I understand. Like, you just want to do what you need to.
Sure.
This was like the guy showed up at like noon.
For an hour.
And it's like the minute he shows up, that's when he's got to go.
Yeah, that's definitely not kosher. Like, there's no way that draws, there's a line that's drawn in the sand, and he's passing it.
That's what I...
Like, he's blowing past it. He's going 200 past it.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you handle that, man. I don't know.
Today, I just ignored it, because I was like, I can't, I'm too busy, I was on a call, I'm like, I can't go and open the door and let this guy, like, it's just, I was like...
Not good.
I don't know what to do, and I didn't want to be
rude. Let's wrap it up,
but
it's pretty simple. aerosol can, extra giant one from Costco. You set it in there, and he gets the drift.
That is a one way of possibly sending a message, a passive-aggressive one at that. But he goes in there and realizes something's different.
Yeah.
Right? There's new furniture in there.
That's right. It's an aerosol can on top of the closed toilet. With his name on it, Danny. Danny. Yes.
That would be the most passive-aggressive move.
Yes. Sharpie his name on an aerosol can say, come on in.
It's all yours, man. Yes, mi casa, su casa.
I agree. My house is his house. He does great work, but they're just, I'm trying to figure out boundaries. There just hasn't been any.
Yeah,
it hasn't been any.
And you're right, though. Like, now we're kind of in a different world, obviously, than we were for a while.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of different things are happening.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more contact. There's a lot more interaction. And
exactly.
And that's a good thing. And as a result, the real world is going to bring those type of things to your doorstep, or in your case, to your washroom.
Exactly.
The Leafs are in action tonight. The Raptors with I think the worst loss of the year last night. That was terrible. And we'll get into that with Jack Armstrong. Jack's going to be in studio in about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And Van Vliet popping off. Fred, whenever he plays well, it seems like Fred is willing to call out the rest of the team.
I'm tired of the whole outfit, buddy. I'm tired of it.
Yep.
I'm tired of the whole outfit. It's the injuries plus the losses plus the inconsistencies. There's, like, nothing to attach yourself to. And I'm not going to sit here and claim like I watched every second before. But it's just like they're hovering around what I call the worst spot in sports. And there's nothing to attach yourself to. There really isn't, man.
No, there isn't. And that's it. They're in the middle ground. They're not a lock to make
it.
I still think they will.
And they've gotten their flowers in the past because of what they've done.
Right.
But time is ticking on that kind of honeymoon phase afterwards. It's like, that was a while ago now, fellas. Quality organizations don't just keep saying, oh, you guys won a championship, Masai and Nick Nurse. Like, the time is ticking, and it's like, they're just not very good. They don't draw your attention. It's like, diehards are obviously going to follow them, but for the casual fan like me, I'm watching it, and I'm like, you're finding a lot of ways to lose games.
But you can't.
It's not that entertaining. If it's the Leafs, we destroy them.
Well, and that's where I think we are with the Raptors. Like, the nature of the NBA bothers me. I think it bothers a lot of people. There were three players that were a game time decision last night in a must win big game. None of them played.
Yeah.
Like, that to me is absurd. Now, individual injuries, but the idea that collectively Barnes, Trent, and Achiuwa all got to a point where it was game time decision.
Right.
The odds of all three of them saying, I can't do it,
that's
ridiculous to me. Like, and that's why you have Malachi Flynn playing minutes late in the fourth quarter last night.
What do you think the coach is thinking, Hayes, when he's in the coach's room and the trainer comes in and he's getting an update on the three potential guys that are game-time decisions, and the trainer says they're all not going?
He
must want to pass out and be like, are you kidding me?
Right. And even with that said, you got to win that game. Like, Tyrese Halliburton didn't play. That's the Pacers' best player. Pacers are brutal. Like, they're not a good team. You haven't played since Sunday. You're at home. You still have Siakam, OG, and Anobi, Van Vliet playing. There's no excuse for them losing that game last night.
And your point about the, you know, time has moved on. How many guys on that team were part of a championship? It's there's a lot
four
of
or
new
five.
Guys.
Yeah.
But that's
four
what
or
I'm
five.
Saying. There's a new blood in. They
there's
can't hang their
guys.
Hat on going, hey, well, we were part of a championship. You got to give it. Like, Scotty Barnes, I get it. He's a kid, second year. Like, you expect some ups and downs. But there's guys that weren't a part of it, weren't a part of the organization. They can't hang their hat on going, well, this is a process, and we're just along for the ride.
No, exactly. And that is the disconnect when you hear Van Vliet speak. Like, Fred was a big part of that.
Yeah.
And Siakam was a big part of it. And then, you know, you see what else is being brought to the table, and it isn't good enough. And that doesn't mean that they're not going to make the play-in, but that's what you're going to get. Like, that's what you're striving for. And that's where, like, Ujiri's going to have to answer this at the end of the year.
Right.
That you went out and you were a buyer at the deadline.
For what?
To achieve a play-in, you know. And they've been better since acquiring Poeltl. Poeltl's been good. He was pretty good again last night. We knew that. He's a veteran in the league. Like, it's not like we didn't know what he was in San Antonio. but they were a buyer for a team that just simply is not good enough and was never going to be good enough with Poeltl.
When's the last time Masai's been asked a tough question? Like, what exactly are you doing? Like, what is the plan? What is the game plan? Like, I'm sure he doesn't want to, or he wouldn't reveal, like, a card up his sleeve or something like that, but it's like, what was the idea behind that? Keeping all those guys and adding a guy? Like, what is the end goal here?
He was citing patience. He was citing, you know, accumulating info on what guys are worth. I mean, he was getting grilled, but Masai, like all these guys who have been around the block for a while, they're politicians when they have to be.
No kidding.
They're politicians when they have to be. They will filibuster. They will give you an answer that really doesn't go anywhere. And it's not
Dude,
surprising.
I love that one, Hayes. Filibuster. I love the answer.
Love filibuster.
The filibuster that takes
that
you in a direction around the corner on a path. And by the end of his answer, you're like anyone with half a brain could see it and be like, that guy didn't even answer any part of that question.
No.
Those drive me nuts. Like, I always wait for the follow-up. Excuse me, sir. You didn't even answer that question.
Nobody answered.
But people just shut up and they're like, oh, I guess. I mean, I'll write that down. But it's insane.
They're the best at it. Like you said, Noodles, it's going on a lot now.
It's going on in this country and south of the border. That's all you see is politicians just loud and making noise, loud noises. But it's like, you didn't answer the question.
Didn't even get close.
One question, and that's your question. They don't answer it, and then they move on to the next person.
No, and listen, it is smart PR.
It is.
Right?
Listen,
like, that's why sports can, in many ways, mirror politics in real life. And, you know, you get executives of teams that, if it's not going well, they go into it. They know exactly what's coming. They know how they're going to handle it. They know what they are willing to say. They know what they're not willing to say.
Right.
And that's the nature of the beast.
Well, keep in mind, as much as we're talking about a guy like Masai, let's look at Kyle Dubas. He was a politician in a positive way around the trade deadline because he was like, no, we're not looking to do this. We're not looking to do that. And he did the exact opposite pretty much at that time.
But then when it was a positive scenario, all of a sudden he got into some details on why they're doing this kind of stuff.
Fair enough.
And why it makes sense. And it comes down to just the environment you're in, the atmosphere. Is it positive? Is it negative? And, that's what's coming here in Toronto is, you know, we're possibly 3 weeks away from some big press conferences.
Right.
Some big press conferences. Maybe we're a couple of months away from a big press conference. But they're coming. You know, the Raptors, because it was interesting that the NBA trade deadline, Masai came out and spoke.
Right.
It wasn't Bobby Webster that came out. Like, Masai is aware of the buzz, aware of what people were saying, what people were thinking, and aware of how his team was playing, right? Like, it's his team, so he has a different viewpoint on it. But you couldn't make up that they were on pace for 50 wins. They weren't, and they're still not. So the fact that he came out and it wasn't Bobby Webster was pretty interesting, because that's also part of, like, the politicking of it all. When do you send out the big dog?
Right.
Now, when is it a Masai, Shanahan, Shapiro presser, and when is it a Webster, Dubas, Atkins presser?
Right.
Like, because they're very different, and that'll be intriguing to see. You know, the Raptors aren't going anywhere. Like, they're gonna, even if they get in, let's say they win the play-in, they're gonna play Milwaukee in the first round or whatever. That's not gonna go well. Like, they're not gonna go anywhere. The Leafs are a different story, though. Like, the Leafs are a very different story in terms of the potentials for what that press conference could look like and who's going to be up, you know, on the podium.
Right.
Because if they lose again, it'll be Shanahan and Dubas, you would assume. If they win, I don't know. I'm not sure what it looks like. Like, you don't do a podium after a round. You're not going to go. You're not going to say, hey, please come ask us questions because we finally won a round. We're excited for this podium.
You're right. A lot of it just depends on how this unfolds. Getting back to the Raptors, though, quickly. At the deadline, my understanding is they made the one move, and they were like, any move that we could have made today, we have the luxury to do this summer.
They're
so
saying
that. We're just going to let that play out.
Which, how
that's
can you
like,
corroborate
that's
that?
That's like president GM speak, though. It's
yes.
Like, they all say that. There's going to be more opportunities at the draft in the summer. It's like, okay.
What? But that's
it. Might be true, Hayes, but it's GM speak.
It could be true, but we'll never know.
Right.
You can't possibly know. You can't possibly know who they were on the phone with, who, what was on the table, and then what will be available in the future, and how you can compare it and contrast it. That's exactly right, though. That's what they said. And at that point, to be fair to like media and people reporting on the team, what are you supposed to do?
Right.
You know, demand all the options that are on the table. They're not going to give you that.
No.
And whenever they make a move, if they decide to make a move in the summer, you're not going to know how that's going to compare to what was available three or four months prior. So all that is just a tactic to get people off your back.
Well,
effectively, leave us alone, because I'm telling you, trust me here, in July we can still make the same deal. Who knows?
Look at the Jacob Chychrun deal. That took, what, 18 months to get that done. You can't tell me that return
wasn't
available.
At some point, that was available.
Exactly.
It had to have been available.
That return at some point.
Had to have been.
Yes.
But it took a long time to get to there. And you're right. You can't go back to Bill Armstrong and go, what, Christmas last year, was that available? Anything.
Right.
Like, it's just in hindsight, you can't go back at it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, in reality, there was probably a better offer on the table at some point.
There might have been.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Now, you're never going to get that out of the incumbent GM.
Right.
You might get it out of the past GM, but why would he do that? Because that makes him look stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he could have sold even higher than he eventually got sold.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I've often wondered that, like, within the ranks of the NHL, how much information is out? How many teams are aware of, you know, what the other teams are up to, what the other teams are possibly filtering through in terms of their options? Because there's got to be so much information out there, and only so much of it actually gets out to the public.
So you're saying, like, if you found out, like, for us in Toronto, we found out, like, what Vancouver was up to, like, behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Like, you had a mole in there or something.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's a ton of relationships within the league.
Yeah, relationships are different. You can have conversations with people that you've worked with and friends with, but there are lines, and I think there's respectful lines. I've played with guys who are AGMs and GMs and stuff. When I have conversations, like, I think they feel like they could trust me, but there's things I guarantee you there's not a chance they would tell me.
No,
just based that,
no,
you know, if
no.
I mentioned it offhand or made a mistake, like, they keep things pretty tight to the vest, all of them. But, you know, in a candid moment, you'd like to get some form of, like, honesty. That'd
absolutely
be great.
Yeah, but banking on that happening anytime soon, probably not going to happen. So Jack Armstrong will join us. Jack and me in studio at 5:30. The Sweet 16 kicking off tonight, or tipping off tonight, I should say. And the Raptors, again, coming off a really ugly win, or ugly loss last night. So Jack will join us to look back on that and tee up the weekend. Leafs are in Florida tonight. We'll start teeing that up. Matt Murray's got a real opportunity here. Samsonov's not even with the team.
Right.
You know, he's back home. His wife is expecting a child, so there's a chance he misses, what, the rest of this trip for sure. That's four more games. How many are you going to see out of Matt Murray? And
I hope he doesn't miss four more games.
Like, my understanding is he's going back and that's it. Like, they're continuing on this trip.
Is the wife in Russia?
No, I don't think so. I believe she's in Toronto.
I don't know. I mean,
hasn't even had the kid yet. That's the problem.
Okay,
right?
So yeah,
they're waiting. It was like Luke Shen, the same thing. Like, Luke stayed in Vancouver and was waiting. Like, he ended up going to Calgary, played that game, and then they went to Vancouver. He played Vancouver, and then he stayed there.
Right.
And he didn't return for another week, I believe.
Yeah.
So
he's packing up stuff and probably arranging a move. Like, I don't know. To miss four games, like, that's pretty rich. I mean, I get it, unless there's complications or it's a planned C-section and all of that stuff. Not, you know, stuff we're not privy to.
Right. Like, three more games.
I hope he's not missing. Because what happens is it's tough to get right back your timing and everything. Like, I'm sure he's skating.
He's got to be skating and working out.
But it's just,
like, they're in Florida tonight, and then it's Carolina, Nashville back-to-back on the weekend. So I don't believe the plan is to have him back.
Yeah,
like, Murray will go tonight, and Murray will go Saturday, and then Joseph Woll will get the game in Nashville, and he'll play next Wednesday when Florida's in town.
This sounded a lot longer than what you laid out. They've
yes.
got three games.
They got
the
three
next
games.
Four nights.
Yeah, because I said they had four more, but the beginning of a five game roadie was in Ottawa.
Right,
so they
right.
played two of the five games. They got three more games. But yeah, my understanding is he's gone, and he'll see them when they come home. So Matt Murray goes tonight, and Matt Murray will go at least one of the games on the weekend. So we'll come back and start looking ahead to that. McDavid hits 70 goals last night.
60 goals.
60 goals last night. Yeah, 60 goals last night.
Can he get there, though? I don't think he can get 70. You
he's
think?
Got 10 more games left. He can. It's like 10 and 10 for him. He had two last night. The way these guys operate on the power play is absurd.
Disgusting.
They have the three highest power play point getters in the league, which is not surprising that McDavid and Draisaitl are there, but Nugent Hopkins is third.
But dude, it seems like they do their standard plays, like they're kind of passed through the seam, and that doesn't work. It's like one of them goes and grabs the puck and says, I've had enough, and they rip it underneath the bar.
They but it's funny. McDavid, like, I wholeheartedly believe that power play is Nugent Hopkins. Like, he runs the half wall, and he's really smart. But McDavid will go, just give me that puck, and I'll circle the wagons until they either come to him or they open up, and he shoots. And if he doesn't shoot, he finds Draisaitl on the goal line where you can't cover. Like, he's way in a bad angle on the goal line. Like, they've got these little set plays. Their power play is the highest in history.
Yeah, it is. It makes me wonder about the playoffs and, you know, their goalie again. He gave up three on like 18 shots last night.
Their goalie.
It's not good.
Actually, I think Skinner's a fine goalie. I think their D, like that Evan Bouchard, they is so lucky that Ekholm showed up. Because that kid is so casual out there. It's insane. Mm-hmm. Like if you watch the go-ahead goal, I think it was Clayton Keller's goal.
Keller had two last night, yeah.
His first goal, Bouchard might have just passed it to him on a stick in a slot. Like, you're going, what's the thought process here? But it's that Ekholm has had such a trickle effect on that D. He's good, like, legitimately.
He's fit in well. He's brought some offense, too, which is not necessarily what they were acquiring him for. But we'll get into McDavid hitting 60 last night. And again, the Leafs in Florida tonight. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, we have a pair of tickets to give away. Leafs Blue Jackets, April 4th. Every day this week, we will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. And on Friday, you'll have a chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue. This former Maple Leaf had two different stints with the team.
Ah.
So we're out. The O-Dog is officially out of contention.
Hang on a second. I know it's me, so he tried to throw a wrench in there with a stupid clue that meant something else. You're telling me this guy played on the team twice?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
Two different stints, two different
claiming,
tours of duty with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Clarify that, Hayes, because I want to know what he's talking about.
That's what they're saying. I thought I knew who it was, but now I don't know
maybe
who
it's
it
like
was.
Did Daniel Winnick play here twice?
Winnick did play here twice, but I don't remember him playing that many games or having that many penalty minutes.
Yeah, he played that many games.
Did he?
Played that many games. I don't know if he had 800 penalty minutes or 600 penalty minutes.
That could be him. I feel like we've used him before, though. Like, we should really get crazy here and go, like, Busher Jackson or something. Like, go old school.
No way.
You know, back in the day, 1920s type of thing.
I want one, that, like, for me, on a Friday, I want the guest to be Brian McCabe. Like, whatever it is. Once scored on his own net, like, fought. Like, at what point would Caber's, like, clue give it away?
I think
on his own net, fought Chara, didn't go so well. Like,
yeah, that would be so obvious. Like, I mean, I think
massive bald spot skullet.
You guys could figure him out pretty
fake
quickly,
teeth.
I think.
Yes, yeah, that
right?
would be.
But if it's inside jokes, I mean, that's
but
kind Caber of
had
story.
A, you like he had a good career,
really good career.
Like we joke,
really good.
He was a really good player here. Like I, you know, hard shot, tough to play against.
Yeah. It was a big deal here when he was, like, about to re-sign or not re-sign. There was, like, rumors of him going back to the island because he spends his... it was a big deal. I remember he had, like, a press conference at a golf outing. It was a big deal. And then not, like, shortly after, he was dealt to Florida a couple years into the deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he was here for a good period of time, man. There were seven or eight guys who were... like staples.
He wasn't part of the Muskoka Five, or is he?
I don't know if he was or not. I mean, I think he was, Caber. I think it was.
What are the. Like, was it Sundin? Kabina. Those are the only two.
Yeah, Kabina was. I think Tux was, yeah.
The guys, I've told Caberlet you before, it's a cool little nickname, but I still don't understand the Muskoka Five. Like, It's just not all of them had cottages, and I don't know the. I can't get it still.
I feel like Hayes gave them the nickname.
No, before I had a mic access.
I think Steve Simmons did, or somebody like that.
Yeah,
Steve,
it was
somebody. Yeah, gave him the nickname, and I still don't get it. It's like Pavel Kubina has never stepped foot in Muskoka.
Was Antropov one of the five?
No. So no. The essence of it was guys who had no trade clauses that didn't want to leave.
Right.
And I think the whole point was, like, you got no one wins.
Right.
Like, what is appealing about being here? Because a lot of the market was starting to push away and was like, you got to trade guys, and they got to bottom out and effectively tank.
Yeah.
And I believe, don't quote me on this, but I believe that was kind of the essence of it, that they were so, you know, the luxuries of Muskoka and Toronto, and it could have been the Bridal Path 5 or the Muskoka 5. It was just, these guys love being here, you know, and wins and losses, which is completely unfair. Like, obviously, they wanted to win, and a few of those guys were a big part of the late 90s and early 2000s that did win a lot.
Yeah, I'm reading it
right now. It's incredibly disparaging comment.
I Googled Muskoka 5. It comes up. Sundin, Tucker, McCabe, Kabina, and Cabrillet.
Yeah, there's your five. There's your five pack.
Caber was part of the Muskoka 5.
Yeah. I don't know who takes claim to that name, though. Like, who was the first one to put that in print?
I put money on Steve Simmons. I put money on
him. You think of a side?
It could have been.
And him. I would sit down and watch a 30 for 30 type doc on the Muskoka 5. I would watch that.
You know what's funny, though? Like, you guys golf with Tux. Like, you got to ask him about it. Like, was he aware of that nickname? Was he aware, like...
I would guess he probably was.
He probably had people saying, like, dude, get traded so we can, you know, kind of restock the shelves. And
I'm surprised
Tux moved on, though. Didn't he go to Colorado and Tampa?
Yeah, he went to Colorado, yeah. I don't think he was traded to Colorado, though. I think he signed there.
Okay.
But I'm surprised Domi wasn't a part of that. Ty would have been here for a long time.
He was already retired, though.
Oh, Ty had already... Did he only play 1 year after the lockout? Domi, or did he keep playing?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah, so maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was 2 or 3 years after, like by 2008, 2009, it was time. And a lot of that, I think, was also that Fergie, like John Ferguson Jr., had been let go.
Yeah.
And he had signed a lot of the contracts. And
hence the Bethy comment.
Yeah, do you regret giving any of these guys the no-movement clause?
That's the Muskoka 5,
that's
basically.
It. Maybe it was Duffy.
Can either confirm or deny that.
Maybe Duffy came up with the Muskoka 5.
It might
be. It wasn't.
I don't think so.
Duffy, he doesn't come up with stuff like that. He doesn't have digs.
He's a creative guy. You're right, though. He's not, like, vindictive or, like... He's not trying to run people out of town.
The Muskoka 5 is like a shot. It's not... Duffy wouldn't do that.
No, he wouldn't.
Yeah.
I don't... I'm with you, although. Like, I don't remember it being a daily part of the conversation in town or anything, but maybe it was. I mean, if you're around the team all the time, I'm not sure.
Right.
Because that's where... Like, I've had Simmons in here before. Simmons been on the show. I remember I did a show with him once, like, it was a summer show years ago.
Yeah,
just talking about all the interactions he's had with players.
Right.
Where he's written something and then walked into the room and they're like, come here for a minute.
Yeah.
I want to have a word with you. And to his credit, he's like, yeah, let's go have a word. Like, I'll break it down. What do you got?
Yeah.
But he's like, if you're a columnist in a city and a provocative columnist.
Yeah.
Toronto, New York, Boston, L.A. At some point, you're going to have an athlete or a coach that is really... unhappy with you. Yes, like really, really desperately wants to have a word with you.
Yeah,
but dude, it's 12 times as bad now, maybe 50, because of everybody. Like, back in the day, it was like nobody even caught wind of half of that stuff. Now it's on Twitter. It's it's everywhere. It makes Sports Center, the quotes up there. It's so different, and every agent is so mad about everything being said. Parents go crazy. It's a different beast right now.
A lot of those reporters, though, hide behind their Twitter. Like, they're not in the room. They'll be real chippy and smart-assy on Twitter about the game. And then you see them in the dressing room, they don't ask a question. They're in the back of the scrum and all that. Like,
yeah, and that's it. Like, that's the thing. Again, like, you know, Simmons has been doing it for a long time. Other guys have been doing
it. Sai has no problem going right in the mix.
Well, remember him and Burke, like when Burke was on his way out of town. That's one of the most classic interactions in press conference history because, you know, Burke and he had... issues.
Battle. Yeah,
they had battles, I guess. But Simmons was in there asking him questions.
Berkey said, Steve, the best thing about getting fired is never having to talk to you again.
And I guarantee you they've spoken since, probably.
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. Berkey, like, Brian seems like a guy that would hold a grudge.
He's like Pat Quinn and...
I think Stan Mikita.
Stan Mikita.
Yeah.
12 years later or something.
But. That's still one of the great stories ever. Mikita clipped Pat Quinn. He waited like 13 years to get him back.
Yeah.
Just beat the hell out of Stan Mikita.
Mikita wasn't that big of a
guy. No, he wasn't
either.
A big guy, but I guess he was chippy.
Yeah.
Like, he must have been chippy. Pat obviously just was like, I'm going to get you.
Yeah, eventually I will get you.
I'm going to get you. Yep, at some point I will get you. But you're right about, like, social media and stuff. Like, you look at where the Leafs are at right now, and that's why I have a difficult time trying to really get a pulse on how everyone's feeling about this team, because the trade deadline's behind you. Like, there's big dates that you look for in your circle, and you wait to see what the team's going to do, and you come up with your reaction on that. In between the deadline and really game one of the playoffs, it's just a blur. You know, it's a bit of a blur. And you want to avoid injuries, which has happened. Ryan O'Reilly getting injured, that was a big story.
Yep.
And that's hurt them in terms of them trying to find cohesion and him trying to just find his role in the team because, you know, he's such a good player, but he had barely made his way into the lineup before he goes out for a month. But you know who they're going to play. It feels like there's there's animosity and nerves and anxiety. And I don't know. Like, is that a fair assessment of what 100% of the fan base is feeling? I would think not.
No, but you see it, like, it's weird. After a loss, you'll see, like, Keefe trending. It's like, oh, this guy's ruined the team. I'm like, how has he ruined the team?
Right.
Like, they're 90 plus points, sitting pretty good. Like, I don't understand. Like,
well, this
but it's the anxiety. It's
the history, right? Like, I was thinking about it today.
Exactly.
It's the also when you. I think the best example of this of where Maple Leaf fans are at, and actually is a perfect segue from the Muskoka Five, because when I gotta stop saying that, Tucker's gonna they hit me coming across.
He's driving
the
down.
You know, you're
right
getting
now.
A message saying if you ever say Muskoka Five again, I'll wrap my five iron around your neck.
I know he's gonna run over me with a golf cart in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So at that time, though, it was the fan base was ready to turn over and ready to tank. And then for like a decade, all you could do was project what they could be in 3 years.
Right.
Like, that's what it always was a three-year plan for a long, long time. They put this piece together. If they get that draft pick, if they win the lottery. And I'm experiencing it right now with this Matthew Nyes kid. And I cannot wrap my head around the fascination with a kid who's playing college hockey when you've got one of the five best teams in the league that's going to the playoffs in 3 weeks. If he plays, great. Yeah. But this idea that they need Nyes... Like, Nyes could be the guy that really puts that second line over the top.
That's what happens
is
in
insane.
This market. Matthew Nyes doesn't just become a college hockey player. He becomes the savior.
Right.
Like, Joe from the Bridge and his cronies are talking, saying, once Nyes gets in the mix, it's game over for everyone. That's the way they're talking about it.
And it's absurd.
But do you know the names? Like, I was messaging with a friend yesterday. Do you know the name Chris Marinucci? He won the Hobie Baker. You know, like...
I don't even think Nyes won the Hobie Baker.
But he was up for
He's been up for it,
Okay,
yes.
So let's look at Hobie Baker final. Who's the guy that's playing... he's a left-handed shot, third line for the Rangers, right? VC. What if he's Jimmy VC?
Yep.
Like, VC was a Hobie Baker and a sought-after...
Oh,
after
he was the second
but,
coming
But what
that
I'm
guy.
Saying is,
sure
like,
was.
Just because you're really good at a lower league, doesn't... Like, Cole Caulfield is a special player. Maybe this kid is a Caulfield type. I think that's what people are going like, okay, well, Cole Caulfield, you know, stepped right in, scorer there, scorer. Nyes is a really good college player. How many guys do you know, do you know, that were really good and stars in other leagues and then get to the NHL and go, oh, it's going to take me 2 years to figure this
out. Exactly. Maybe he needs 2 years with the Marlies. Maybe he does step in. But even, I look at the Caulfield stuff, that was a year... It was a weird year because it was the bubble. It was COVID.
He had to go to Laval for a little sniff.
After his first year.
After his first year. Remember,
right?
He had a horrible start. They sent him down.
Yeah.
But even then, now, to the credit of the Montreal Canadiens, they went on a run all the way to the Cup Final. People in Montreal thought that team was not very good. Like, they were running Bergevin out of town. They were like, this isn't that good. And that's my point. I think they were looking at Caulfield as a three-year plan.
Right.
Right. Let's get them up. I'm excited. I want to see it because they got to turn things over. And then all of a sudden, they caught lightning in a bottle. They go to a cup final.
Right.
That's not the case here. Right. Like it's if this was a team that was on the bubble of getting in and just growing and trying to take another step, fine. I can understand the fascination with a college prospect.
Right.
But this team's been in the playoffs 7 years in a row. This will be their eighth. They have Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares. They're one of the five best teams in the league. They're playing a juggernaut that's been to three straight cup finals.
Right.
The idea that Matthew Nyes is even on the radar to me is tough to acknowledge.
They just have to keep it as a maybe because that's what he is. You guys talked about different things that could happen. It might not. It's just a maybe. It's like when you refer to Matthew Nyes, it's maybe he can step in and be a contributing factor. That's all that is right now.
It'd be a nice bonus. I think everything, you're right. It's a maybe or it's an added bonus. Unless they're 100% sure, like, this is the missing piece. This is why we didn't go and do this at the deadline. This guy's
You've been around the league for a long time.
Yes.
Could you imagine that being the case?
Not
a college player who's going to play, like, you know.
I
can't picture a team, and in this case, Dubas and company, saying, we're committed to that.
No,
that
I think they have that as an option.
Sure.
Where like, if this kid gets it right away, if his size and speed translates to the league right away, you know, this might be an option that would surprise us. But I don't think they're putting all their eggs in that basket, and that's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Like, I mean, in terms of the next 2 months, outside of name value, I'm not sure they look at Nyes as an option more than they look at Bobby McMahon as an option. Like, a guy who's played with the Marlies, a little bit older, as someone that maybe they could use at some point. And if he surprises and comes in and plays and scores big goals, awesome. Like, I'm not even really talking about it from a Leafs standpoint.
Right.
Like, if you're in management, you have to think of every possible angle.
Dude, the approach that they would have, Hazy. He surprises and he comes in and he has some success.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe for a couple months stretch, he's unbelievable. And we'll take care of next year.
Right. But, like, they're in Florida tonight. I expect them to bounce back tonight. I do. They haven't been playing great. You know, they really didn't play great in the island. They played really poorly in Ottawa. Florida's desperate, but they're flawed as well. There's a reason they're in the position they're in. And I think the Leafs come out and play tonight, and that's where my focus is at. What does John Tavares bring tonight? What does William Nylander bring
better
tonight?
Be something.
It absolutely better be something. When does Keith... Forget bringing... That's another part of it. Yelling and screaming about turning over the roster too much, and then you're waiting for a college kid to come in. And where's he going to play? And is he going to move up and down the lineup? I'm curious how Keith would answer that in a candid moment. Like, does he want another guy he's got to try to find a role for?
Yeah.
Does he? Like, at what point does it become too much where even the coach is like, I need 18 guys in this room.
That's, by the way, when would the time frame be for this kid to even show up? Is that like a month away?
No, he's playing tonight,
Apparently, it's like next week.
Once he loses, he can sign. Like,
right.
I believe it's a one-off. Like, you got to win to move on, is my understanding. So it's like today or the 25th, and then if he gets through to next weekend, then it's next Thursday or next Saturday.
Like, yeah, the Bridge cronies or whatever had it all laid out. If they make the finals of the Frozen Four, and
they'll be tracking
stuff.
Private birds. Where's the MLSC plane? Flying in Matthew Nyes. Now the Leafs can win a cup.
Yeah.
When Nyes shows up.
I just, like, I there's lots of Hobie Baker winners that turned out to be great players, and there's lots of Hobie Baker winners that turned out to be just Hobie Baker winners.
Yeah.
I say that all the time. Everyone's like, well, Garrett Sparks won top goalie in the minors. Okay. You know, if you go back and look at the AHL top goaltenders, about 50% actually had lengthy careers. The other 50% were really good minor league goaltenders that played on really good teams.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's like anything. It's a coin flip. You don't know how it translates to the best league in the world.
Especially in this situation.
Exactly.
We're talking Leafs, Tampa, Game 1, a crazy series. With the most pressure that any team is facing in the league, which can be a positive if a kid just shows up and is running on adrenaline and doesn't know any better. That absolutely has happened before, but we'll see. All right, Ray Ferraro coming up. Ray's going to join us in 20 minutes. Got Ray on McDavid hitting 60 goals last night. that Crosby goal last night in Colorado was unbelievable. And that was a big win for them. Jari played well. They needed that W. So we'll get to that more still to come. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and up on TSN. All right, Ray's coming up. Ray Ferraro in about 15 minutes. Ray's down in Dallas. Pittsburgh Stars tonight. We call that for ESPN. Catch up with Ray. We got Jack Armstrong coming in studio as well. Jack will be in here at around 5:30.
Yeah.
Looking back on a terrible Raptor loss last night and the Sweet 16 starting up tonight. So Jack and the crew doing a great job, of course, on TSN. And we're tracking the match play. Canadians, Corey Connors loves a match play. The other guys, not so much. Yeah, my boy Nick Taylor, he's 0-2. It's not a good start.
Not the best. He just got taken down by your buddy.
Who's that?
Brian Harmon. And by the way, you sent me a text today, and I have to know if you got the numbers correct. I believe you text me that our boy Billy Zaltz, Will Zalatoros, who is an absolute mess right now with the flat stick, he's got octopus fingers putting that thing. $130 million he's been offered by LIV Golf.
Yep. Turned it down. Now, that is according to Fred Couples.
Turned it down?
Turned down $130
million. Wow.
Yes, because he and Couples, I guess, share an agent. I'm not sure Couples was supposed to go public with that.
No, I don't. Freddie likes to blurt out some stuff.
Yeah, he does. He's been pretty vocal recently. And he'll be wearing his green jacket around Augusta in a couple of weeks. Freddie will be there at the Champions Dinner. That's going to get awkward. But yeah, if that's true, this is the craziness of LIV.
Right.
Like, if you turn down that money, I totally understand why you would. The competition of the PGA. The PGA has amplified the amount of money that they put on the line. You're thinking you're going to be on tour for 20 years. This is the life you choose over LIV.
Right.
But if you turn down $130 million and you start rolling putts like Bill Zalatoris,
chopping it around,
and you fall apart.
That's exactly what my stance would be. $130 million is offered. I am sitting around a table with my family, some smart golf people, my agent, and I would want one person to stand up and put on a video screen your putting stroke and say, no, how are you going to depend on that for 10 or 15 years? And there's $130 million sitting out there for you. How do you possibly say no in a financial? This guy was doing stuff today. Outrageous.
Yeah, he can't putt, man. But at majors, the guy is a stud. He doesn't close.
Dude,
he
in on
everything.
It like Tiger Woods in his prime.
Tee to green, he is an absolute stud. It's on the green that things get a little bit goofy for Bill. And meanwhile, that's out there in the universe now. You turned down $130 million, which has got to be difficult to chew on if you're Greg Norman. You're like, let me get this straight. You're Will Zalatoris. Like 2 years ago, no one had heard of you before. You've never won a major, and you're turning down $130
million? Dude, he's only won one tournament. He won in Memphis last year.
Right, in the FedEx playoff, I believe.
Unless it's a lie. Unless he comes out and goes, if I was offered that money, I'm gone. Like, maybe it was a different number.
It could have been tied to different things. Freddie, who knows what Fred Couples is talking
about. But that's the thing. If it's 130 cash, you know, just pay the tax on it, or you move it offshore. But it's more about, like, it doesn't make sense. Something is not jiving. Like, it might not be 130 guaranteed. You could make up to this over this amount of time. Because I would imagine the LIV might have a few more options. So they might just be going, okay, you can make up to 130 here, but you got to do this.
Right. You got to commit to this and do that.
It's over
and
a certain amount.
Still, it's $130 million that is available to that you're turning down.
Agreed.
You see the money signed by Luca last night to the ref? I mean, you guys have played in pro sports before. Like, I haven't seen the NBA come down with anything yet in terms of fines. Like, everyone's expecting these. You cannot look at a ref and insinuate that he's on the take.
But you don't know that was, maybe he was talking like, I make more cash than you. He could come up with something, dude. You can't. You don't know that that means you're on the take.
You think he's going? Who? What do you think the ref thought he made more than Luka?
Like, no. I'm just that maybe he's saying I make mega bucks. Don't screw with me. I don't know. I can't
body language.
Isn't there a hand gesture for the tiniest violin too? Where you're like, cry me a river.
Yeah, you're gonna have Jack in there soon. You show that to Jack and say, what is he doing here? What does that mean?
I think you're crazy if you think that meant anything but you screwed us, and I think you're on the take, and I'm putting together the money sign, because there was a big controversy at the end of the third quarter. Big.
Oh, and people were freaking out on the refs last night.
Absolutely. Yeah. League-wide, Trae Young, who I found it rich that Trae Young comes out. We'll get into this in the next hour.
Dude, it goes back to the complaining, bud. Like,
yeah.
Everyone
always
complaining.
And, like, Van Vliet complained. Fred had to pay $30,000 for that. And the refs are an issue. There's no questioning that. But, like, Trae Young said, they should be treated the same way players are and be held accountable, blah, blah, blah. If the player has an awful game, he doesn't give money back.
Right.
Like, how are you held accountable? Sure, when your contract comes up, but if you have a mega deal, you're not being held accountable.
That's
in the
true.
NBA, you don't even have to play if you don't want to. Hour two coming up. Ray Ferraro will join us. Jack Armstrong as well. Leafs Panthers tonight on TSN Radio. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.